Hey, kids, you're listening to A Couple of Annoyed Grunt Boys, and this is the 138th Simpsons Podcast. That's right, we're the Simpsons Podcast that discusses the beloved animated sitcom The Simpsons from seasons 11 and beyond, and the new episodes when they air. Why do we do it this way? Well, the entity known as Wheel of Random has trapped us and cursed us to only watch those episodes, because plenty of other podcasts out there have discussed the Golden Age, that being seasons 1 through 10, so we're tasked to see if there's any episodes from the latter seasons that can match those Golden Age episodes. And when I say we, I'm just one annoyed grunt boy named Craig. With me, as always, is the other annoyed grunt boy,
Steve. Hello, Craig.
Hello, Steve. Welcome to this week's episode.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if you have learned anything from this last week of, I guess, the middle week of October 2023?
Yeah, there's a lot going on in the world, but I really only care about the important things.
Like what's going on in the Middle East.
I mean, that's fine. Whatever. But no, I don't want to joke about that. That's a horrible nightmare. But another horrible nightmare is seemingly the marriage of Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith. Because it was revealed...
Whoa. I thought we were told to keep her motherfucking name out of your fucking mouth.
I'm sorry. Please do not slap me. It was revealed this week, though, that they had been split since 2016. But I think it goes a little bit further back. So I think I've been doing a little bit of research of my own, because that's how you learn.
Do your own research.
Exactly. And I think it goes all the way back to the year 2004. Now, Will Smith had a number of films out that year, iRobot, but we won't joke about iRobot this Christmas. But another film that came out was called A Shark Tale. And I'm thinking that that's when the troubles really began, because I think my theory is that William Smith is much like beloved actor Troy McClure, and I think he did Shark Tale because he has a penchant for the finned variety, if you get what I'm saying.
Mermaids?
I mean, he doesn't even go that far. Just the mer, no maid. He's all about the fishies.
Oh, Steve.
Ah, what do you jerks know? That's a quality joke.
So yeah, I've been playing that Will Smith fucks fish.
You know what's funny, Steve?
Hmm.
On the hit TV show Gotham, where Jada Pinkett Smith was a character for the first couple seasons, her name was Fish Mooney.
Oh, see? There you go.
Was she trying to win Will Smith back by being named Fish?
I think so, yeah.
We will never know what stays behind their doors. Although, no, because she's very vocal about...
Yeah, we will know.
Yeah, we will know everything.
If she needs a paycheck, she'll go on the media and like let us know.
Maybe we could get her on the podcast to spill the beans, Steve.
Maybe, yeah.
And then we could be a guest on her Red Book podcast, or whatever it's called. Red Door, something like that.
Yeah.
We could talk about all of our sexual encounters with each other.
And our child's friends.
Yes. You know what fish like to drink, Steve?
Presumably water.
Yeah, but what do we like to drink?
Oh, beer.
That's why it's time to go to our favorite segment, The Simpsons Beer Corner.
Now a little beer music to get in the mood.
All right, Steve, what do you got for us this week?
Well, Craig, this episode revolves largely around bees and a queen bee. So that's why from Jester King Brewery out of Austin, Texas, I have Queen's Order. It is a farmhouse ale brewed with honey and lemon peel. I'd say the can is pretty kid-friendly. It has kind of like a 70s vibe a little bit, but it has like bees pollinating flowers and doing their bee thing.
Steve's going to pour it in a glass. And this glass will be the optimistic's glass because it'll be half full.
Indeed. But unfortunately, it is half full of foam, a very heady beer.
Ooh, you better suck that foam, Steve.
Suck, I will. Suck, suck.
That's Steve sucking down some foam.
Just need balls in my mouth.
I know, Steve.
So this is a very light beer coming at 4.8%.
So I won't get drunk real quick.
It's got a nice flavor. Pretty bold for the lower ABV. It has just a hint of that farmhouse funkiness without being overpowering.
Mm-hmm.
but the honey does kind of come through. It's not sweet, but it kind of has that kind of rich kind of coat your mouth flavor. And then the lemon peel kind of does a nice job of balancing out the sweet and the tart. So pretty solid beer. Maybe not perfect for this time of year, but a great, like, easy drinking summertime delight.
Well, you're thinking of the bees in the summer, Steve. It's okay, Steve.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go to the opposite. Instead of a bee theme, I'm going to go with the A story, which was about billionaires.
Oh.
And spoilers to the end of the episode, Mr. Burns won't be a billionaire anymore. And, you know, for most people, if they lose their money, they're in what they call the red, right?
Nice, yeah.
So Mr. Burns is probably in the red now, only being a millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
To him, that's poverty. So, Steve, that's why I went with Bowie Beer's Northwest Red Ale. It's a amber ale, of course, with the 6.7 ABVs, so a little bit boozier than yours. It's from, of course, Astoria, Oregon. I've probably done a couple of Bowie Beers. They're one of my favorite local breweries.
Really good. In
Pacific Northwest, yeah. It's not kid-friendly. I mean, it's the Bowie has like kind of the same labels all around. It's a branding, you know, it's a couple stripes. There's a Bowie on it with a circle, the word Bowie. And of course, the stripes on this color of can will be red because it's a red ale. It's a big malty hoppy all wrapped together from our Northwest Red. A red blend of five malt varieties commingling to create a dark red color and a big malt base to balance the generous amounts of hops that are added. Late kettle additions and dry hopping with ultra and sterling hops bringing out the hop character that many in the Northwest crave. Steve, do you crave this?
Every day.
Anyway, well, let's get to find out how it is. I already had my poured out everything, and
very nice.
That's very hoppy. I'm not sure what the IBUs on this, but it's probably a little bit higher because you're getting very hoppy, very bitterness of this, I think. But in a good way. I'm. It's funny. I like reds, and reds can also, in my opinion, kind of be on the hoppy side of like an IPA, which of course I say I'm not a big IPA guy.
Sure.
But of course, like Steve, this last summer was IPA adventurous, and I've been low-key IPA adventurous as well.
Ooh.
I enjoy this. I've always liked a red ale.
Yeah, I always say that they don't make enough red ales. Like, it's not,
no.
It's such a good beer that they don't make it. Just, it's not widely available.
Yeah, one of my favorites, I think, is Laurelwood's Red, which I've never reviewed on this podcast because, you know, I'm supposed to be reviewing beer I've never had before.
Right.
And I've had that plenty of times, but that's one of my favorite reds. Yeah, after a couple reds, I get pretty sleepy, so I'm going to stick with this one so I don't fall asleep on the podcast again.
I appreciate that.
All right. Well, Steve, let's get in our time machine and go to the year that time forgot.
Oh.
2008. Back when we were a young mid-20-somethings.
Ah, yes.
Playing our Nintendo 64s. I don't know. What was popular in 2008?
Probably a PS2, maybe?
Maybe three.
Maybe three, yeah.
We couldn't afford a three by then. But Steve, December 7th, 2008. We're going to see what was going on in pop culture.
Yeah.
Movies and music, Steve. So what was the movie that everyone was seeing December 7th, 2008, number one in the box office?
Why, it's that classic Vince Vaughn, Reese Witherspoon, holiday hijinks abound. You know it. You love it. It's Four Christmases.
You know, when you think of, gotta watch those Christmas movies every year, and that's going to be Christmas Vacation and Home Alone and A Christmas Story and It's a Wonderful Life. This movie is definitely a movie.
No doubt about it. It has been in movie theaters. Yeah.
We got a 25% tomato meter and then a 47% audience score.
Wow.
This is one I've never seen, and I probably won't do it.
No, this seems like the quintessential either movie that you saw on an airplane one time, or it was on TBS on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, let's see here, Steve. When their plans for an exotic vacation fall apart, unmarried couple Brad, played by Vince Vaughn, and Kate, Reese Witherspoon, must spend Christmas Day trudging around to a quartet of family get-togethers while Brad counts the hours till he can escape the onslaught of crazy relatives, and Kate begins to wonder about her own choices and ponders whether her family members are so crazy after all. Vince Vaughn, I think, is like, he loves Christmas movies. I like producing them.
Yeah.
So here is some of the Christmas movies he's been a part of. We got A Christmas Story Christmas, which was the Christmas Story sequel with the original kids as adults, which I said was actually a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And then he was a producer for Christmas with the Campbells. Fred Claus, he was producer of that.
He also starred in, I believe.
And he wrote Christmas with the Campbells, which
That's another movie I think came out last year. Because I think Vince Vaughn and Peter Billingsley, who is, of course, the kid from the story, like they are like in, they own a production company by themselves, or they own a production company. So I did watch that one, Christmas with the Campbells. It's got Brittany Snow, Justin Long in it. Of course, George Wendt is in it. Julia Duffy, Alex Moffat from SNL.
Yeah, the whole deal is it's like a Hallmark movie, but it's dirty, right?
Yeah. I just didn't find myself laughing. It wasn't that, I don't think it was that good.
Yeah, I think I tried to watch it as well, and I had the same results.
So there you go. Vince Vaughn loves Christmas. He's not trying to take Christmas away like the liberals.
That's right. Still always a little weird when I see him pop up on Curb. Yeah. Like, okay. But Craig, while we were frantically going from holiday to holiday watching Four Christmases, what were we listening to in the in our car radios?
It was T.I. featuring Rihanna, Live Your Life.
What you need to do is be thankful for the life you got, you know what I'm saying? Stop looking at what you ain't got, start being thankful for what you do got. Let's get it to him, baby girl. Hey!
Oh, wow, there's so much going on in that song, Steve.
There's a lot of elements.
Can you just sample everything that was popular then? Make it. Hey, it sounds like it's a positive song, you know, Live Your Life, whatever that, I guess. And then it starts off with the famous, one of the first, like, famous internet memes, right? The whatever song, or that one guy.
Right, right, yeah.
That was the number one song, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it's fine. I love Rihanna, but... is this, just a lot going on, Steve.
I think that it is a very, like, multi-layered song that...
Little Unga Pachka?
A little bit, yeah. I think it would be more suited, maybe... I don't imagine sitting down to listening to the song, but it might be better suited in, like, maybe a basketball arena.
Like, when the Dallas Mavs score a touch point, right? Is that what you call a touch point?
Or yeah, yeah, I think so.
A home basket?
A tip-in.
a goal run?
They caught the stitch.
Hey, Steve. We were trying to segue talking about basketball and the Dallas Mavericks and the owner, Mark Cuban, which, he's in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
So let's go to this episode, Steve. I think we should start talking about it, like, really soon.
Okay.
All right. Well, it's called The Burns and the Bees.
Fun.
Lisa discovers that the honey harvesters across the globe are dying out. She sets out on a crusade to save them. Unfortunately, her hopes rest on one billionaire named C. Montgomery Burns. So, Steve, let's finish our beers. Hopefully, we don't get stung by any bees.
Hope not.
Become billionaires, because then we'll be real jerks.
It's true.
Yeah. All right, Steve, we'll be right back. And we're back. Today we're talking about The Burns and the Bees. It's the 8th episode of the 20th season, originally aired December 7th, 2008. It's episode 428 in the show's run. Your nerd code is KABF21, written by Stephanie Gillis, directed by Mark Kirkland, and the showrunner is Al Jean.
Alrighty, Stephanie Gillis, American television writer. She's written for The Simpsons, and she's written 11 episodes. She lives in LA with some guy named Al. I think Al Jean. No, she's Al Jean's husband, Al Jean's wife. They're spouses. This is the 4th episode we've reviewed of hers. We also did See Homer Run, Once Upon a Time in Springfield, and Homerland. And I'm going to be honest, none of those really resonate with me greatly.
I do remember Homerland, even though that was our 23rd episode, but that was the Homeland.
Right, parody. Right.
Once Upon a Time in Springfield, that was 175th episode, and See Homer Run, 179th.
So the See Homer Run is the Safety Salamander episode.
Okay, there's some, I think, some fun things from that one.
The Once Upon a Time in Springfield is the one where Anne Hathaway becomes Krusty's Princess Penelope.
Oh, yeah. We never see her again.
Right.
Princess Penelope was supposed to be Krusty's like long-term girlfriend, right? Or they were,
mm-hmm.
and, yeah, and we haven't seen her since.
Yeah.
Come on, Anne Hathaway, what are you doing now?
Are you busy? Come on.
Oh, wait, she can't work. Don't forget, SAG is still on strike.
That's right.
It feels like even when the writer's strike is over, WGA is over, like it felt like, we're back to normal, but we're not.
No.
The writers can work, but we can't make movies without actors.
Right.
And of course, you know, all the Teamsters, the people like the contractors and like carpenters and sound mm-hmm. guys, like, you know, they got to work too. So come on, you greedy producers, give the actors what they need.
It's not that hard. Yeah. And right now the writers are just making books and nobody likes books.
Yeah, there's writing sketches on Sunday morning live. And you'd think, you know, with 5 months off, they'd come up with some good material.
You would think. And yet, here we are.
Not an SNL podcast.
But good choice for a host. Real funny. So the title of the episode is obviously a take on the birds and the bees used by parents when explaining a sexual relationship to a child. Futurama, which you fans have probably heard of, is a sister show of The Simpsons. They also have an episode of related to this called The Bots and the Bees, which is not the bee episode that you think of when you think of Futurama, because that one is called The Sting.
Isn't it like up there with Jurassic Bark as being like a very sad episode?
Yeah, to me, I think it's a very like emotionally resonant episode and very, really good.
Oh, hey, speaking of Futurama, I actually finished the new season. Season 11, I think.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
And
we were supposed to do a podcast on it, you know, one of these days.
One of these days.
Overall, I very much enjoyed the new episodes.
Very nice.
There's some fun stuff, fun parodies in all the episodes. They all seemed like they were nice, like, their own unique episode. It was good.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
A lot of shenanigans going on with those Futurama kids. Well, Steve, you know, last week we brought the Wheel of Random out because we haven't used it in months.
Right.
You know, the Wheel was also on strike, much like the writers and actors.
Mm-hmm.
And the Wheel and us, we came to an agreement and we used it. And this is what we're watching. And as soon as the credits started with a Christmas theme to the tune of Oh, Christmas Tree, I'm thinking, we're dumb. We're in the scariest of months, October, and mm-hmm. we have so many Treehouse of Horrors we haven't tackled yet. Why didn't we just make an audible and do a Treehouse this week?
Yeah.
No, apparently we're doing a Christmas episode, because that's what it seems like, right?
What it seems like, yeah.
Yeah. The sequence continues. We see Springfield is covered in snow, and the buildings are all decorated for the holidays. And we even have the seasonal chalkboard gag, which Bart writes, Jesus is not mad, his birthday is on Christmas. And I think theologists have pretty much said that Jesus was probably born in like the springtime.
Yeah, I think June or July, maybe.
And like the whole reason we celebrate Jesus on Christmas Day is because it was a pagan holiday and the Christians had to like butt into the pagans and be like, no, you can't do this.
Yeah, another case of a religious faction just taking space where they shouldn't.
I mean, if you guys are religious out there, and I'm sure many of our listeners are.
Oh, yeah.
That's good. Good for you. But, you know, name three good things that came out of religion. So
yeah.
Let's continue the credits here. Bart hops on a snowboard and hits the fluffy stuff. And then we go to the Springfield nuclear power plant. And Merry Christmas covers the usual sign that says days since the last accident sign. So Homer works and Burge and Smither look on, dressed as Ebenezer Scrooge and the ghost of Jacob Marley, respectively. In the music room of Springfield Elementary, Lisa blasts Deck the Halls on her saxophone, clearly establishing that we are in for a Yuletide episode, guys.
Mm-hmm.
After the family make their way through the snowfield seats of the town, they arrive in their living room where they sit on a couch and the camera pans out to reveal the image depicted in an ornament hanging on a Christmas tree next to a fireplace with care.
Oh, well, two things about that intro. One, it is the second time being used. The first is in Kill Bill's Volume 1 and 2, which we talked about in our 204th episode back in December of last year when it was Christmas time. Also in that clip, in the music room, Lisa's playing her saxophone, and it's gold, which marks a change because previously it had been more of an orange color. But when it's on the show, it's gold. So this is the first time it had been gold in the intro.
I'm glad they fixed that.
I know all the nerds are worried. So let's get the show on the road. Our presumably festive episode begins in the typical locale of Mr. Burns's private jet. Burns and Smithers are just 2 minutes away from landing at the billionaire's retreat, where Monty will celebrate his favorite week of the year. He looks forward to sophisticated financial discussions with fellow plutocrats, But at the picnic, Monty wears a shirt that says billionaires rule, they don't, and declares a food fight. He squirts ketchup on Ted Turner and shouts in your face to the founder of Facebook, who at the time wasn't relevant, or as relevant, but it's Mark Zuckerberg. We then see all the fun activities partaken at a retreat, such as
roasting jewels over an open fire, not the singer, but the gems.
Who will save her soul? archery with priceless paintings as targets, such as the Mona Lisa by Leonardo da Vinci, Whistler's Mother by James Whistler, and The Scream by Edvard Munch.
And then let's go to the absurd. They're playing a game of Quidditch, which is kind of funny because before this, I don't think notable turf J.K. Rowling was a billionaire, but now she is, right?
I think you are correct. Yeah.
So she will probably be playing Quidditch with them.
Mm-hmm. And using the only proper bathroom that she feels fit.
Unless Bart pulls a boner on her and spray paints the W.O.
That's true.
On a door. Yeah.
It would be ironic if Bart did pull J.K. Rowling's boner, because that would just confuse a lot of matters. Anyway,
it would be ironic, don't you think?
I really do think.
Okay.
And we have skinny dipping. Mr. Burns strips naked and dives into the lake. The rich Texan follows suit, bearing it all but leaving his hat, boots, and gun holster on. And all the other wealthy white men get naked and hop in, including a man in a wheelchair.
I'm not sure who that's a reference to.
I'm not sure either.
Did you notice, though, in the billionaires, there was a former president in the background?
Oh.
You can see him eating a hot dog. And I mean, the hair looks pretty spot on. And look, The Simpsons predicted, because all we know about Trump is he likes to eat junk food. And there he is, just drinking a soda, probably a Diet Coke and a hot dog.
Oh, yeah. It's true. Simpsons right. Predicted it.
Meanwhile, Steve, let's go to the Springfield Elementary, where Bart is using spray paint to cover up the W&O from the women's restroom, just like I said. And Principal Skinner walks on by and reads it as men and declares that's the room for him. Also, you think Principal Skinner would know the layout of his own school and which bathrooms were which, right?
One would think, yeah.
So he walks in for maybe half a second and then comes out with like his pants already down. Like,
he got a head start.
Yeah. Are you the type like, well, I really got to go to the bathroom? As soon as you enter the public restroom, like, or do you wait till you get to like the urinal to then take your pants off?
Yeah. I usually wait either until I get to the urinal or until the attendant comes to take them down. I'm at a fancy restaurant.
So then there's so many like screams of younger girls and probably maybe some teachers. I don't know, but a lot of girl screams come from the. It was just a very funny scene. Anyway, so the bullies, Jimbo, Kearney, and Dolph are impressed with Bart's mischief. So let's play a clip here.
Nice prank, Simpson. I dare you to dump that bee's nest on those second grade babies.
Why would I want to?
Because I said I dare you. Kearney, can you read it back? Nice prank, Simpson. I dare you to dump that bee's nest on those second grade babies. Bart, why would I want to? Jimbo, because I said I dare you. Kearney, can you read it back? Kearney, reading. Nice prank, Simpson. I dare you to...
The point is, Simpson, a dare has been placed on your nards.
My nards accept.
Sting-a-ma-jigs! Save yourselves!
Huh? Where are the bees?
No bees? Dare annulled.
Can I appeal?
Yeah, appeal to other guys, Captain Wuss!
Other than the birth of my kid, this is my happiest moment!
That's kind of sad, Kearney, that your best moment is Jimbo ragging on somebody else.
With like a homophobic joke.
Exactly, yeah.
It's time for Kearney to be woke, Steve.
I think so, yeah. I mean, he's got a kid to raise. He should be more open-minded.
Exactly.
The rules of the dare. Like, it's funny how like when kids like set up like, oh, you got to do this because I dared you. No, you don't. You don't have to do anything.
Yeah, I don't remember ever being dared to do anything. And if I did, I think I was just probably like, well, the cop's going to come and arrest me for not
right.
Dare.
The dare police going to come?
Uh-oh. Oh. It's just moms against drunk driving, right?
Yeah, and they're angry.
Yeah.
One might even say mad.
Fun start, Steve, with the teasing of the kids.
Yeah. So Lisa examines the hive and discovers that all the bees are, in fact, dead. Willie confirms Lisa's findings, saying that the bees are dying all over the world, from Glasgow to Edinburgh, which is 75 kilometers away, or roughly 46 miles apart, and nobody knows why. Mm. He then plays Amazing Grace on the bagpipes, and we see a field of deceased bees. Willie laments the loss of his bee friends, and Lisa is surprised to learn that Willie is an apiarist, which the groundskeeper knows from context means beekeeper. Willie hates the fact that he's outlived his bees, pointing to tiny gravestones of fallen bees who are stinging God now, such as
Buzz Aldrin,
B. Arthur,
Gordon Sumner, Sting,
B. B. King,
Susan B. Anthony,
and Jerry Seinfeld.
Because bees only live to 17 years and Jerry only dates 17-year-olds. No, this is the bee movie.
Yeah.
Steve, can you think of any other fun bee celebrity puns?
Michael B. Jordan.
Oh, there you go. He was probably only like 4 when this episode came out.
Yeah. Honey Boo Boo.
She was not even come when this episode came out. I think that covers it, Steve.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, let's go back to the billionaire's retreat, all right? So each rich guy has a cabin of his own with a ticker outside displaying their net worth. Burns is roughly about $18 billion. Warren, around $50 billion. Bill Gates at $57 billion. Rupert Murdoch displays a $6.8 billion. But then the Australian media mogul and complete asshole spray paints a 7 in front of the ticker to imply that he's worth $78 billion. Some of the billionaires gather around the fire to tell scary stories while others join Mr. Burns in a poker game.
And the call from the SEC was coming from inside their own brokerage house.
Jeff Bezos wet his pants.
I did not. That was apple juice from before.
I fold.
I raise $1 million. And to sweeten the pot, my assistant Smithers.
If you lose me, sir, may I say what an honor it's been to...
Bets don't talk. They see and raise.
Well, if we're betting people, I got a whole herd of them. My professional basketball team, the Austin Celtics.
So we got Jeff Bezos, Amazon owner and pants sweater, playing himself.
This is pre-Bezos with like the shaved head and like he got buff.
It's funny because he looks like a dork, but he sounds like a surfer. Even though he's probably like 45.
Yeah, he's something.
Yeah.
Look, our podcast is on his company. So Amazon, we're on Audible, I think. Yeah, we're on Audible. Check us out on Amazon Music or Audible. We can't say anything negative about him because I use his company.
I mean, the thing is like we as a society have been backed into a corner where it's kind of hard not to use his company.
Yeah.
We'll talk about another billionaire later on in the episode who's less worse, presumably.
See, there's no good billionaires.
That's true. Speaking of, Rich Texan talking about trading people and having a squad just feels a little gross.
Especially because he's got the Southern accent, Steve.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is funny that it's the Austin Celtics.
Yeah, that's a fun bit of thing. I'm sure whoever came up with that was pretty proud of themselves, as they should be.
Yeah. Well, Burns feels that the basketball isn't worth a Smithers, but is eager to keep the night moving along. So he offers his hand with a 9 high, which beats the Rich Texans 8 high, which I really think is funny that maybe it's a nice commentary on billionaires where, you know, in poker, that's a hand, both hands, 9 high and 8 high are something you would fold into. Is a
right.
But for them, it doesn't matter. So as Byrne reflects on his winnings, the Rich Texan begs him to take good care of the team, and he suggests keeping the forwards away from the guards. And if the team is acting sluggish, slip some steroids into their cocaine. So then in this clip over at 742 Evergreen Terrace, Homer's watching TV and is interrupted by a dire warning from his daughter. No, not Maggie.
Oh,
the other one.
Bart.
Fortune 4 lotto numbers are 9.
Knew it.
7.
Duh.
3.
What?
And
boring.
Dad, we have to do something. All the bees are dying.
Oh, no bees. Ooh, now who will sting me and walk all over my sandwiches?
But, Dad, bees pollinate flowers.
Flowers. The painted whores of the plant world.
No bees means no honey.
I like Homer's reaction to the lottery numbers.
Just the first one, 9. Knew it.
Duh.
And then didn't even bother, like, finishing it off.
Right.
Steve, are flowers the painted whores of the plant kingdom?
I don't want to say painted whores. I'd say, like, well-decorated sex workers.
Because that's what birds and bees, they bang flowers, right?
That is my understanding, yeah. Still don't fully understand it. So Homer then imagines a bleak future where the Springfield Shopper reports of an ongoing honey famine. Homer runs through the streets of a post-apocalyptic dystopian nightmare where a honey truck is engulfed in flames. A video billboard shows a woman offering synthetic honey, just like you remember. A small square robot, who kind of resembles Wall-E, offers Homer a bear-shaped bottle of honey. Homer cheerfully evinces the bot and begins to suck on the bottle as if it were his mother's breast until the Wall-E-like bot consumes Homer and spits him out, leaving him in the shape of a cube.
Homer's got a pretty active imagination here. I like it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So back in reality, Homer admits that he never thought that the future could be so scary. He then tells Lisa that he's ready to go save the worms. But Lisa corrects him, saying the bees need saving. He replies, worms, bees, ticks, fleas. And then head off to a flowery field where they meet the good old Professor Frink.
I'm glad you called me. I know I'm not the first scientist in the phone book. That's Associate Professor Aaron Abelman. How I hate him. Thundering thorax! It's just exactly what I feared. But in there, close. See these red dots? This bee has been felled by bee measles, or as I call it, beezles.
Animals can get sick?
I'm going to talk to the girl from now on.
You're the nerd.
What we need to do now is find enough uninfected bees to start a healthy colony. This pheromone should attract them.
Marry me, and I'll support you for life.
You're not a bee! This thing is useless.
There's one on Lisa! Hold still, sweetie. Daddy will kill it. And this time, no screw-ups.
Stop! Stop! It's an uninfected queen!
I like just how the Professor Frinks doesn't waste a beat on Homer when Homer just says, animals can get sick. And just like, I'm going to talk to the girl now. Like, not even like a shrug or a sigh.
Yeah, just pretty good. Straightforward. I like it. Also, a fun like little callback in a way to a classic joke when he's talking about being the first scientist that you call, and that's Dr. Abelman. Kind of a good fun throwback to when Patty and Selma are talking about, I'm going to call everybody from Aaron Aronson to Zed Zickel. Those are the two biggest gossips in town, you know?
Yeah, I was like that scene. That was good.
Yeah, good stuff. So Lisa excitedly asks how to catch the queen without hurting her. And Frink says the best method is to allow the bee to sting Lisa, which the queen does. Following Frink's instructions, Lisa squeezes the stinger out, freeing the queen and causing a colony of bees to form around Lisa's face. She's supposed to leave the bees there around her face until the colony is healthy and thriving. When Lisa asks how long this process will take, the professor tells her it'll be long enough that she'll be known as Springfield's crazy bee girl.
Steve, before we continue, are you allergic to bees?
I am not allergic to bees.
Me either, so there is no EpiPens for us if we get stung by a bee.
When is the last time you were stung by a bee?
It was probably, what year is this, 2043? It was probably 2012, maybe it was 10 years ago.
Wow.
I was like sitting down outside wearing sandals, and then I like took them off, you know, just to like, but not like took them off and walked around, just like slid them off, and then kind of like had them, had my foot kind of like hovering over them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize at the time that a bee had landed on it, and then I go put my foot back in, like my right big toe, and all of a sudden I'm like, ow, what the fuck was that? And then
yeah.
I look, and there's literally a bee stinging my toe, and I pull it out, and then like a sadistic masochist, I put it on like the table in front of me, and I just watch it walking to its death. I'm like, you son of a bitch. Yeah.
Let wow.
that stinger fall from you and die, you piece of shit. But I felt bad because, you know, it's a bee, and it was just you know, trying to defend itself. It didn't know what a sandal was. And of course, I felt bad. But that, how about you?
So I've been stung a total of 3 times in my life. The first time I was I was like 8 and I was stuck in traffic. I was not driving. I was in the passenger seat. And it was a hot day, so I had, like, my hand outside of the car door just kind of, like, drumming along to whatever song was playing. We'll say, nothing but a good time. I don't know. but then a bee flew between the palm of my hand and the car door, and I didn't realize it, but I think I trapped it, and then it stung me. Another time I was walking barefoot through a field, and I just happened to step on one, and it stung me.
Yep. No.
And then the last time was probably, like, 8 years ago. Laura and I were at, like, some outlet mall shopping. And I had like shopping bags in both my hands. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, I just felt like on like the inside of my right arm, like this huge pain. And I dropped my bag and started screaming. And Laura had no idea what was going on. She's like, what is wrong with you? And yeah, that one was probably the worst one. But
wait,
all in all,
so You're saying you had like a sharp pain in your right arm.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure you weren't having a heart attack?
Maybe that's what it was. I did have several sausages that day and several beers. Yeah, it was probably a heart attack.
Phew. I was worried it was a bee sting.
I know. Dodge that bullet.
Yeah, nice. But the whole line, too, of Homer, of like, bees just land on your sandwiches. That's like the drawback of eating outside is just the amount of bees. That now sometimes, like when I go to outdoor restaurants, they have these like little fans that will just spin around on the table and that will get rid of the bees. And I highly recommend purchasing some of those on a Jeff Bezos, Amazon.com. I think they're
like
for $24.99. They'll be shipped within 2 days to your house.
Yeah.
But the bees are done for the season, Steve. We'll have to wait for our bee problems in the summertime.
Now we got to focus on our A problems.
Yeah. A for A. Aronson.
That's right.
All right. Well, let's go back to the Springfield residence of The Simpsons. Homer pops his head into the window to ask Marge if she remembers the recent discussion about their worst fears. Homer's, of course, is the fear of snakes, and Marge is, and then she says, never being a grandmother. I mean, I don't think she's going to have a problem with that, you know, with Bart.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She'll be fine. Homer was under the impression it was, you know, Lisa with a beard of bees. But either way, he tells Marge to brace herself. So Lisa walks into the house sporting a full beard and mustache made of bees. And Abe is just in the kitchen and walks out and says to her, hey, look, Abe Lincoln, welcome back. He's happy to see that he's got rid of the hat. So he's got grandpa's vote. Oh, poor Abe.
They share a name. So
yeah,
I would vote for somebody with my name.
Steve, your first name is actually Donald.
Oh, right. Uh-oh. I got to vote for Donald Sutherland.
Or Donald Faison.
Oh, yeah.
Rennie made Zach Braff, which once like they're in the White House, some kid will come up to Vice President Zach Braff and then Zach Braff will just punch him.
That's right.
Because he thinks he's being pranked.
And it'll take Natalie Portman and the music of the Shins to calm him down. So Marge isn't fond of Lisa's new bee situation, but Lisa tells her that it won't last long. And until the bees can find a suitable habitat, it's their only hope. Bart offers to mold the bees into a shape that Marge will know and love, and then forms the bees into hair, eyes, and glasses, making Lisa look like Milhouse. Marge tells Bart to stop Milhousing Lisa, and then I'm sure Milhouse wants to Milhouse Lisa too.
Yeah.
And the bees revert back to their beard shape. Marge asks Lisa to take the bees off before she's stung, but Lisa tells her mother that they rarely sting when they're in a cluster, only attacking to defend the hive. Marge isn't so sure, saying that it only takes one troubled loner, but Lisa begs to keep them, and Bart helps by shaping bees into sad eyebrows on Lisa's face. So Marge is going to allow the bees to stay for at least one night.
Well, at the Dallas Arena, the Mavericks face off against Burns' newest acquisition, the Springfield Celtics. Monty uses opera glasses from the skybox to see how his burly bottom ball handlers are faring. And I like how in the there's just visiting owner's box.
Yeah.
All stadiums have. So Burns is happy to see his team up 2-0 and instructs them to run out the clock, which still has, you know, 11 minutes and 47 seconds left in the first quarter. And the opposing Mavericks hit a three-pointer and their gregarious owner, Mark Cuban, responds.
Oh, yeah. 3 points. Big three and a big D for the big C. Mark Cuban, that's me.
Who is that man? And why isn't his enthusiasm being punished?
That's Mark Cuban, sir. He's the most flamboyant owner in the league.
Now, odd. His money seems to have bought him happiness. I'd like to meet him, Smithers.
So, you made your money in nuclear power? I can't remember how I made my money.
If you're really a billionaire, give me the secret billionaire's handshake. Smithers, turn away.
This was when, like, the country was introduced to Mark Cuban. I mean, not The Simpsons, but before Shark Tank.
Right.
He was just this, as we said earlier, a gregarious owner. You know, you didn't really see much from the owner's perspective, like watching the game, like being down there. Like, again, like owners usually sat in like the boxes. And like Mark Cuban was kind of like the guy that would be down courtside with his team.
Right.
And, you know, young billionaire. What did he actually make his billions on? I don't know. It wasn't Scrub Daddy because that was Shark Tank.
Yeah.
Was he even Scrub Daddy? I don't know.
I tried to look it up and like, I think he kind of was, may have been born into it.
It wasn't Maybelline. He was born with it.
That's right.
I thought he invented that very tasty sandwich, you know, with the ham and the pickles.
Oh, yeah. Named after him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in software. He invented something called Micro Solutions and then AudioNet and Broadcast.com.
Okay, I'm sure.
He was like early in on live streaming on the internet and stuff like that.
All right.
But also, it was kind of bold of him to buy the Mavericks because at the time, especially in the 90s and into the early 2000s.
And he was a Maverick himself.
Exactly. Because they, as a team, were considered a joke. Because right. They were like one of the worst teams in the league. And I think with his, I want to say influence, but mostly his money, they became a viable like team.
Yeah, that's the one sport I don't follow, the basketball NBA. So I'm sure they're still a cromulent team.
Oh, yeah. So back to that handshake. The two billionaires take each other's hands and begin to dance a well-choreographed routine with flips and spins. They then intertwine their hands to form the shape of a dollar sign, thereby completing the secret handshake.
Is it okay if I found that scene stupid and annoying?
No, it is really dumb.
Okay.
It felt long and unnecessary.
Much like my penis.
Hey, long and unnecessary.
Two of things are lies.
With a slightly left bent, much like The Simpsons. Monty then asks Mark why he doesn't recoil from the public, like most of people in his financial status. And Mr. Cuban answers Burns that why own a basketball team if you're not going to have any fun? Burns struggles to pronounce the word fun, as he's only ever seen it written. Mark Cuban then runs off since no one's paid attention to him in 10 seconds.
I mean, it's kind of fun that he's making fun of himself in this episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it just billionaire Matt Groening calling his billionaire friends saying, hey, do you want to be on the show about billionaires?
Do I? Yeah.
The one they couldn't get was probably Rupert Murdoch, and they really wanted him. But he eventually did make a voice on The Simpsons, right?
Yeah, I think so.
You know, as much as we talk about a former president on this podcast, and it's really Rupert Murdoch's fault. The country is the way it is.
We wouldn't have that president if it wasn't for him, honestly.
Anyway, so the Shark Tank judge runs to the center court to juggle a basketball, chainsaw, and a cheerleader, much to the delight of the crowd. Burns feels that it's time for this peacock to show his feathers. He then clarifies that he means, you know, the feathers with the big eye that trick them into thinking, that's my friend. Said feathers are what he'll haunt.
That exposition felt a little clunky. At the dining room table, the Simpsons enjoy some pancakes. Bart is worried that Marge used too much syrup, though, but that doesn't stop Homer. He eats the flapjack stack, bees all over his fork and mouth. His secret is to avoid swallowing the stingers, instead spitting them out into a glass. Lisa begs Homer not to eat the bees, but Homer figures that since they're just drones, they'll only live, like, for 5 minutes anyway. He goes on to say that the drones have haploid cells, not diploid cells, like Homer and Bart. And then they share a high five. I think it's sweet that Homer is learning stuff about bees, just like, he knows nothing, but like he bothered to learn that about haploid cells.
And the Simpsons are teaching us, because at this time we were all really worried about the bees. I mean, we're still worried about the bees, but not as much as we were, because we have more things to worry about than bees.
Uh-huh. So much more to worry about.
I mean, we don't even care about the aliens that are on this planet.
Who cares?
Yeah.
They're like number 8 on our list.
Bees like 25 on the list.
Yeah.
I think we saved the whales, though, so we're good there.
Remember in the 90s when he cared about, like, does that frozen yogurt have fat in it? That was their concern.
That whole episode of Seinfeld where it was like, fat-free frozen yogurt. But it wasn't.
That was a simpler time. So Marge then gives Lisa a potential solution to her bee problem.
Listen, Lisa, I was trying to think of a way to help your bees, and I remembered this abandoned greenhouse outside of town.
Which used to be a beautiful, thriving greenhouse till I was hired to run it.
Your bees will have plenty of room in this old greenhouse. Plus, there are flowers. And it's near a prison, so they'll have a place to sting people.
Oh, Mom, it's perfect. Go live your lives. Get off my face. Oh, I miss them.
Now you know how I'll feel when you go to college.
You'll always have Bart. Always.
But he'll be gone a lot, repairing refrigerators.
Always.
And probably getting a lot of people pregnant, so you'll be a grandmother, Marge.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, there's going to be those lonely housewives that need their fridge repaired, and Bart's going to come over and fix their thermostat.
Oh, yeah. I'll repair your ice machine.
She's going to Milhouse the wives. Milhousing. That's a sex term, right? Milhousing?
I'm sure it is, yeah.
Okay. I do like Marge's line of, and it's next to a prison where they can sting people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go back to the Springfield Sports Palace, which resembles the Boston Garden. The big game is underway. The announcer welcomes the team's new fun-loving owner. You've seen him on the cover of December 1943's issue of Collier's Magazine. It's C. Montgomery Burns. Monty flies onto the court in a helicopter with his face on it. He then rides a rope to center court, and the crowd goes wild. He then invites the fans to make some noise for the newly named Springfield Excitement. And Homer anticipated the name change, painting Springfield Excitement on his chest. Monty then sings a patriotic tune and learns a little bit about the 20th century world history.
Now I would like to sing our national anthem. My country, 'tis of thee, Austria-Hungary, obey your king.
Sir, the Archduke is dead.
What? The Archduke is dead?
And the empire is destroyed.
Then what happened?
World War I.
Then what?
World War II.
Then what?
Post-war period.
Then what?
The Cold War.
Then what?
But can't reopen it.
Then what?
Can't reopen it, Geneva.
Then what?
The European Union.
The European Union? Good heavens.
I might have to amp up the Smithers, but you can still kind of hear it, especially if you're wearing headphones in this podcast.
Yeah, I can hear it really well there, but that is, I don't know, this is a fun little run.
Really good, yeah.
The festivities continue at the Springfield Sports Palace, home of the world's smallest jumbotron. Burns warns the ladies to hold on to their husbands as he welcomes the saucy antics of Springfield's own Basket Bells. So we have conservative-dressed Gibson girls taking to the basketball court, doing a dance with a parasol before exposing bare ankle.
Ooh.
The audience boos, and Burns puts a stop to the vulgarity, telling those harlots to return to their brothel. Monty tells the people to enjoy the game and his own madcap antics.
Pretty funny scene.
Mm-hmm.
The Gibson girls. I mean, the Basket Bells, I feel like that could be a thing.
Oh, yeah. It's a great name.
Yeah. But like them dressing up in like old timey costumes.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mark Cuban should do that with his, I don't know. Does he have cheerleaders? Probably.
Probably like the Maverick Maidens or something.
So those antics included flinging shovels on foie gras into the crowd and dressing as a safari hunter and shooting and killing the ape mascot who is going for a trampoline dunk. And Smithers asks if the bullets were real, and Burns replies that they were, and then wonders if the gorilla was real, and then he watches as the blood ooze out of the mascot's body, and we learn that he's not. So the audience all leave in disgust, and Waylon tells his boss that his antics are driving fans away, and Monty is eager to turn the business around.
So he decides that he's going to think outside the old boxiola and wonders, what would Mark Cuban do? Thought bubble then appears over his head, showing Mark Cuban in a speeding red sports car driving off a cliff while he shouts, I'm out of my mind. The car then crashes into the ground and bursts into flames. Monty then realizes that, you know, that whole dream wasn't much help. But then a winged angel of Mr. Cuban flies from the wreckage to tell Monty to build a new state-of-the-art arena.
Ooh, good idea. Let's go back to the B story, Steve. So at the greenhouse, Lisa watches as her bees flourish in their new environment. This peaceful scene is short-lived, however, as a wrecking ball crashes through the glass, and Lisa looks outside to find that she's in the middle of a demolition site and the future home of the Springfield Excitement. So Mr. Burns tells his crew to pave and tar the way God intended, but Lisa yells that he can't do this. Burns responds by saying that he can, and he shall. In the future, he will have done. He brags that he can't be stopped, and then runs into a tree and falls to the ground. And Burns orders the tree's acorns to be killed while the tree watches.
That reminded me of this clip that happened to pop up on my social media of Sarah Silverman doing a bit about squirrels. Made me think of you because of your squirrel friendships.
The truth is I am, and I have gotten into squirrels, and now I'm going to get you into squirrels. I'm not kidding. Wait until you see.
So squirrels lose like 80% of the nuts that they bury
because
they just forget about them. And that's so sad, but that's also how trees come to be.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
So I have like a little box garden, and in the start digging around to like plant things and find so many peanuts. And then, of course, the hot dog that I planted, and the hot dog tree has yet to grow, Steve. Ah,
man, need more yield.
I need more hot dog tree.
Now, do you have to plant a separate bun tree?
I think so, but I just kind of wanted to see if I could, my wiener can grow.
Sure, yeah. It's
more important that I have a growing wiener than I could put my growing wiener in some nice homemade buns.
Oh, yes. And the problem, of course, with the hot dog tree and the bun tree is that the hot dog tree yields 12 and the bun tree only yields 8. This doesn't make any sense.
Who's God thought of that?
Anyway, so let's go to the Springfield Town Hall, where a meeting is held to debate Burns versus the bees. And then the following night, there's another meeting regarding Burns versus Fred Scher. So let's hear from Mayor Quimby.
First, one announcement. I regret to inform you we are not offering childcare tonight. I don't know who that guy was you were leaving your kids with. Now, without further ado, let's get ready to referendum!
There's only one place in town where the bees can survive, and Mr. Burns wants to tear it down. Please, people, you didn't listen to me about the snail darter, you didn't listen to me about the osprey, and you didn't listen to me about the javelina.
The feisty pig in the desert?
Apparently not feisty enough. Future generations will judge us by how we cared for the tiniest creatures. I am not just asking you to save the bees. I am asking you to save your souls.
Excellent speech, just excellent. I no longer wish to build my magnificent new basketball stadium.
You don't?
Heavens, no. No skyboxes, no kiss cam. Nor will we have the chance to marvel at number one draft pick, Muckmoo, the human North Pole.
Now that building sure looks like bee boxes, Steve.
It really does.
I wonder if that will come into the story later.
I'm sure it won't. Muckmoo. So he's obviously a take on like the Jeremy Lin or like a lot of the draft trades that they had with like, Asian players.
Yao Ming.
Exactly, Yao Ming. I only know him because back when Tapped Out was a thing, for some reason he was very prominent when I was playing, even though it was like probably 10 years after this.
I thought you were saying Yao Ming, the only reason you know him is because he's in like the crosswords every day.
Oh yeah, that too.
Okay.
But Muckmoo, like I just remember seeing him in the game, I was like, why is he, what is his deal? So now I know that it's from this episode. <you know. laughs>
I must have been done with Tapped Out by the time, because I don't remember Muckmoo in the Tapped Out.
I think there was a specific sports themed era where with like all of the fake people who have been on the Simpsons who do sports. So,
all right. Well, Steve, the crowd gasps as Burns introduces the tall Inuit player. Burns says Muckmoo will be on the first kayak back to Ketchikan, but the townspeople beg. Carl asks that they don't take their freak, and Mo declares his love for the new player. The rest of the crowd chants Muckmoo, and Quimby then takes a vote. Who is in favor of building a decadent monument to excess? And everyone says aye, except, of course, Lisa, who lets out a defeated nay. She then tries to reason with Muckmoo, calling him a gently loving soul. The transport then speaks in his native tongue, which translates to I kill whales for fun.
Yeah. So Lisa, holding a glass barrel full of her bees, watches as their former paradise is torn down in place of an ostentatious sports venue. She then goes with her father to Moe's, where the titular barkeep asks what's wrong with their bees. Lisa explains that Mr. Burns took away their sanctuary, and now they aren't strong enough to survive on their own. Lisa then takes a big swig of milk and tries to leave.
I'm going home. Give me the keys to my bike lock.
Are you sure?
Give me the keys!
Okay, okay. Don't know why I had them in the first place.
Oh, I'd do anything to cheer up my little girl.
Really? Listen, Homer, in the back room, I got these super tough Africanized bees. I saw this ad in a gentleman's magazine for excited African honeys, and that's what they sent me. If we could combine them with Lisa's bees, it would make them strong enough to survive any environment.
But how are we supposed to combine the DNA of two strains of the same species?
Actually, Homer,
you and me?
No, the bees.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's what I meant, too. I have no inclination.
Got the queen?
Yep, and she's ready for a night of anonymous sex with multiple partners.
We're bringing back the whispering, but I think at this time you can't really hear Mo, but let's see if I can isolate some of the audio here and see if we can hear anything. Yeah, I don't think we get anything from this, do we?
I don't think so, no.
I just heard some cabbage or something.
Yeah. Shoop shakapaku.
All right, let's try to amplify this a little bit more. I feel like I'm a detective on CSI.
Mm-hmm. Enhance.
I think I kind of hear like we could fuck some cabbage.
Yeah, I think it's fuck some cabbage.
Okay. All right. I do like, I mean, my favorite joke, I think, probably from this episode and from this clip is the Lisa being drunk on milk and then a drunk, like, give me my car keys and the bartender, you know, because you give the keys to the bartender so you don't drive home drunk.
Right.
But the fact that he's like, give me my bike lock keys. And like, I was like, I don't even know why I had them in the first place. It's a very funny scene.
It really is. I think it was funny, too, that I don't know how I feel about the term African honeys.
But also, that's something that would probably be in an old magazine.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But also the fact that Homer kind of wanted to have sex with Mo.
Yeah, he just like kind of wanted to.
Like, yeah,
disappointed he didn't.
Yeah. Fun stuff. Mo uses a pair of tweezers to gently pull the queen out of a plastic bag and into the jar full of quote-unquote Africanized bees. He then puts a towel over the jar to give them some privacy while they get down to busyness. So as Sea of Love plays, Mo dims the lights, lights some candles, and offers a tiny bottle of champagne with two tiny flute glasses. He declares that if it was him doing the fucking, he'd be done by now.
Well, 6 weeks later, Steve, it's the opening night of the brand new Springfield Excitement Arena. A statue of Burns in the iconic Michael Jordan Jumpman pose adorns the outside of the towering arena. And the nearby Lisa and Homer walk up a hill, clearly exhausted. Lisa knows this must be something important as she's never seen her father walk up an incline. And Homer presents his surprise. It's several bee boxes full of bees. Lisa assumes that those are her bees, but Homer gleefully tells her that her bees died several days ago. These are their angry mutant descendants, tough enough to live in any environment. And those boxes are kind of set up just like the arena.
It's funny how it's shaped like that. Yeah. Lisa notices that the bees sound mad and worry that they may be dangerous. Homer opens one of the bee boxes to check if they are in fact dangerous. And the bees all burst out, knocking Homer on his little ass. Homer sarcastically tells the bees that a simple yes would suffice. And Lisa screams in fear as the bees swarm around them. Homer confidently feels that the bees will stay in place. But the swarm heads straight to the new stadium. That it looks exactly like their hive and bee boxes.
Wow. Well, Steve, from the multi-eyed perspective of the swarm, we get closer to the arena where Monty is welcoming the crowd to the American Dream, where a billionaire is using public funds to construct a private playground for the rich and powerful. So as the crowd cheers at the perils of capitalism, Monty offers the skybox owner something special by letting in the sky. The top of the arena opens up, letting in the swarm of angry bees. They attack the entire crowd, including Bumblebee Man, who pleads with them that he is one of them. A single bee states via caption that they hate him most of all, calling him an Uncle Tom. Not even the announcer's box is safe from the terrorizing insects.
We've been invaded by a swarm of killer bees. My microphone is no microphone at all. It's bees. Am I being badly stung? Yes, and it hurts. Ah!
Marv Albert.
Yeah, but I'm also glad that the organ player is still doing his job.
Yeah. So the Jumbotron operator, who is being bombarded by bees, displays the words "Bees Rule" on the screen, followed by the bee attendance of the stadium, 498,262. And then some bee bloopers, which include a bee attacking a woman's cleavage, or her boobies, only to have the camera zoom out to reveal that she's actually a mannequin in a department store. The bees then hit the players, including Muck Moo, who states that he has 50 words for snow, but no words for this particular occurrence.
Well, Chief Wiggum tries to shoot the bees, but finds that his bullets are useless. And the swarm takes his gun and shoots him in the arm, proving that the bullets are useful on him. And time passes, and the bees have taken over the arena, turning it into a giant beehive. Lisa and Homer explore the new home of the bees, where they are met by Mr. Burns, who admits defeat. He warns, though, that the next time they meet, the beekeeper will be the beekey bee.
Ooh.
He then grabs a bee and laughs diabolically. The bee flies off, lifting him up in the air, and Burns cries for Muckmoo's help, who is reluctant but admits that this gig is still better than playing for the Clippers. Ah, take that, LA fans. I think the Clippers are like kind of good now, right? They're almost, are they better than the Lakers in this day and age?
Probably. Like, I think that they're a better cohesive team. Like, the Lakers probably have more star players, but I think as a team, the Clippers are probably better.
All right. Well, again, we are the last people to talk about basketball. So
it's true. So we jump ahead 1 year later, where the billionaires once again gather around the fire to tell scary stories at their annual retreat.
So that's how I was outfoxed by a little girl and her half-wit companion when my beautiful stadium was declared a bee sanctuary and I had to take a third quarter write-down of $804 million.
Wait a minute. Someone crunched the numbers.
He's only worth $996,036,000.
He's not a billionaire at all.
Wait, wait, wait. It's only a matter of $4 million. I'm sure I can find that somewhere. I have $50 here in my wallet. Mark, can you get me off the hook for old time's sake?
Can't do it, Monty.
Oh, don't worry. You'll feel a lot more comfortable in the millionaire's camp.
No, no. Just kill me now.
Howdy do. I own a minor league hockey team.
So we learned that millionaires are just bumpkins, right?
Just some yokels.
Does our podcast own a minor league hockey team? I think we do.
I think so, yeah.
I'd love to own a minor league hockey team.
Oh, that'd be great. I don't care if they're from Saskatchewan or Regina or even...
Regina, a city that rhymes with fun.
That's right. If I had a minor league hockey team from them, I would call them the Monologues. Yeah.
I like
some fun math, because who doesn't love that?
I'm going to take a break while you talk about math.
Alrighty. So in the poker game earlier on in the episode, we see the cabins showing every billionaire's net worth. Mr. Burns' worth is set to be $1,800,036,000. And so when they talk about the loss of taking $804 million, it does leave him with $996,000. So the nerds writing this episode, Stephanie Gillis et al., they did the math right. So good on them.
Well, they know how to do basic arithmetic.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm like watching this episode and like thinking, and this is not my review, but like, wow, this is just kind of like a Mad Libs of an episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because there's a TV verdict writer named Eric Asperschlager who wrote, part of me knows that the only way to enjoy the modern incarnation of The Simpsons is to stop expecting the stories to make sense. This episode is not straightforward at all. It's like sometime after the 10th season, The Simpsons writers started using Mad Libs to generate story ideas. In fact, I've got a sneaky suspicion the only reason this episode exists is because someone came with the title The Burns and the Bees and they just had to make it work. And that's kind of how I feel too, you know, like.
Yeah.
It's, and we've talked about that before, but like, we want to do like a Simpsons Mad Libs. And then like, you know, with the chat GPT, we kind of did that. And this episode is very much like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the episode, right, Steve?
I think that's it. I wonder if we feel the same way that Eric Asperlager feels.
And I'm not saying a Mad Libs is a bad thing. I love Mad Libs. But well, let's find out what we really thought about it. We'll take a little break and come back.
Sounds good.
We'll be right back. All right, we're back. Let's wrap up this week's episode, The Burns and the Bees. We'll talk about some of our favorite scenes, some jokes, maybe an MVJ, what we thought about the episode in general, and we'll find out what we're watching next week. But before we do that, we like to give the gift of something from this episode. I was just about to say it, the gift of bees. Every episode, we give each other bees. So here you go, Steve. Here's a bunch of bees. No, something from this episode that could be a gift. And, hold out your hand real quick.
Okay.
Close your eyes.
Uh-huh.
And they're just about done. And here's some nice roasted gems hot off the fire.
Ah, toasty. They're so valuable, but so hot.
And you're now part of the Billionaires Club, Steve. So congratulations, you're a billionaire.
Oh, wow. Well, I really appreciate that. And I want you to live the good life, too. That's why I got you a big barrel full of foie gras.
Mm. Just should we have food fight now?
Yeah, food fight.
And go skinny dipping.
In your face, founder of Facebook.
What wonderful gifts. Steve, what about from this episode? Was there a particular joke that you thought was great or a couple of jokes? Do you have a MVJ favorite scene?
So I think the concept of whispering is my MVJ for this episode. My two favorite jokes are probably Smithers whispering to Burns about the history of the world, part two, just about what happened in the 20th century. And then later on, Mo and Homer at the bar talking about the African bees and Homer's failed attempts to have sex with Mo. But yeah, I think the ancillary characters were probably the funniest for me, although I did appreciate Homer's ignorance and then knowledge of the world of the apiarist or the apiary arts.
Watch yourself, Steve.
Sorry.
Saying those words. I think when this episode came out, it was Mark Cuban might have been like funny in it. But I think in this day and age when we're recording in 2023, like the idea of billionaires is just like we hate them. So
yeah,
it's not fun.
I will say about Mark Cuban is he has worked to make pharmaceuticals more affordable and accessible to people, particularly insulin. So while, you know, billionaires probably shouldn't exist in this capitalist nightmare that we find ourselves in, I think that he's doing some good.
Don't quote me on this, but I think like if you work for his organization, like even like at the like stadium, like being like a concession worker, I think they get don't they get a pretty good living wage? I think
they do. And good pay and good benefits, too. So.
Yeah. But I still think my favorite joke is Lisa and Mo, with Mo having Lisa's bike lock keys.
Yeah.
It was great. And Marge, I thought Marge was fun in this episode. She had one-liners, especially with the beast now sting the prisoners.
Yeah, that's
and,
like, funny.
Her concern about not being a grandmother was a very funny line. And Bart just hanging around the house when she's an older lady. So I'm going to give it to Marge.
I like that.
All right, Steve. Well, in general, what do you give this episode?
It's kind of a mixed bag for me. I think the things we just talked about are very funny. I think the bee tombstones were funny. Good use of play. I actually kind of liked Lisa's bee plot. a lot more than I did like Monty's A plot, even though they kind of melded into one. It does feel like a lot of mishmash of reused ideas mixed with just trying to be culturally relevant. It's like they took the framework of the Little Lisa slurry and just kind of put it over the idea of tall basketball players from other countries and billionaires. It has its moments. It's fun, but I don't know that it's like my favorite anything. Kind of just feels like one that would get lost in the shuffle. It is interesting how we perceive the rich and the wealthy then versus now. And it does, you know, kind of bring forth the concept of the plight of the bees and how we need to save them. So I don't know. I'm a little torn on this one because there were some fun parts, but ultimately I'm going to say it's a soft watch for me. So not a skip exactly, but maybe not like the best episode. I will say that at 11 minutes and 46 seconds of the first quarter, the score of the game was 2-0. So out of two, I'm going to give this a one.
It's pretty decent score then.
I mean,
it's a crappy score.
Exactly.
It's a 50%.
Right. But it's one away from being perfect.
True. I'm going to agree with you on this one. I think this episode is just filler. As most filler episodes go, it's forgettable in a year from now. I'm not going to remember it. But there was, you know, some like, again, some highlights. But I'm not like, you know, this isn't, a Scorpion's Tale. Rock you like a hurricane. Or is it? I'm not sure. I forgot all about Scorpion's Tale at this point. But, you know, we're coming off of like the second episode of the 35th season where it was a very emotional episode. And you're just like, wow, The Simpsons can do this. And then you see something like this the following week, you're like, oh, this is what they used to be. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to see like The Simpsons was like that Mad Libs type of storytelling until now with, I think, a lot of like younger writers, even people younger than us.
Right.
Writing The Simpsons and bringing the heart back. So it's weird juxtaposition seeing like this episode next to a season 35. So that's where my mind's at. But this is just a middle of the road episode. It is a skip for me. I gave it a ranking. You know, we got Mark Cuban, who did purchase the Mavericks, the majority stake, in the year 2000, Steve, from H. Ross Perot Jr., who, of course, is the son of famous one-time presidential candidate Ross Perot. And as we all know, Ross Perot finished his life.
Can he finish?
Yeah. And you finished on July 9th, 2019 at age 89. Ross Perot left us. So out of 89, I'll give this episode a basketball legend jersey number 23, Michael Jordan, number 23. So 23 out of 89.
That's a fine score. That makes sense.
Okay. Well, Steve, this episode was not a nothing but net episode, not a swoosh, but more of a, what's the opposite of not scoring a perfect basket?
An air ball.
An air ball. This was an air ball of an episode. See, we know some basketball terms.
Yeah.
This episode kind of double dribbled and didn't go for the layup. Or was it kind of a layup of an episode, right?
Yeah, kind of.
All right. Well, Steve, let's find out what we're watching next week. And I got some good news. The Wheel of Random, who made us watch this episode, I said, sit down. We're going back to season 35. Steve, we got a new episode next week.
Oh, boy. I'm excited.
Season 35, episode 3.
Uh-huh.
Steve, the episode title. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to give you the episode title, and then you got to come up with what you think the plot is.
Okay.
It's called McMansion and Wife. So McMansion and Wife, and interesting that we had this episode about the rich who live in McMansions and have wives.
Yeah. So McMansion and Wife is a take on McCabe and Wife. Is that what it is?
McMillan?
McMillan and Wife. There it is. And that's a 70s crime procedural.
Which all the kids know.
So I'm going to say that Marge gets a job, a part-time job, cleaning McMansions for Springfield's wealthy elite. Then she is privy to a murder. So she and Homer become a crime-solving duo.
Ooh, I love it.
And
that sounds like our B story, Steve.
Yes. Milhouse and Bart start a men's rights podcast.
Milhousing it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love it. That sounds like a fun episode and our Mad Libs of an episode. They'll probably be in season 20.
Sure.
But, it's not quite the episode that we have here, Steve. We have... when a new neighbor showers him with kindness, Homer thinks he's being tricked into buying a sports car at the dealership where the neighbors work. But the truth turns out to be even more sinister. Meanwhile, here's the B story, Steve. Lisa neutralizes Nelson after he goes on a bullying spree.
Huh.
Maybe that was a typo. Maybe Lisa neuters him. I don't know.
Maybe, yeah.
Steve, we have a very big name in this episode.
Oh, really?
Yes. A one very probably known for the best British impersonation from an American actor.
Sure.
A man in his 90s. A man who was the star of probably one of the most influential family sitcoms / work sitcoms of all time. That's right. Mr. Penis Fan Lesbian himself. Dick Van Dyke.
Oh, boy. Man, yeah. That's exciting.
It's been 35 seasons and we haven't had a Dick Van Dyke guest spot. That's going to be fun. Do you think he's going to dance?
I hope he dances. Yeah, I think he will.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to next week because, of course, it is a new episode.
Mm-hmm.
So, Steve, thanks again for doing this podcast with me.
Thank you.
One last time. I'm just going to say one last time every time because you never know. We might get struck by lightning and die.
Yeah, who knows?
One could be lucky. But yeah, hey, what's more lucky is that we have listeners like you and we really want to hear from you. Reach out to us on social media. Like Instagram at 138simpsons or youtube.com/@138simpsons or email us at 138simpsons@gmail.com.
If you want to leave us a message, you can do so on just click on that microphone and leave us a voicemail, or you can leave us a review on your favorite podcatching app. Leave us 5 stars or the equivalent, but you don't need to write a real review. Just tell us what environmental concern about the end of the world are you most worried about?
And get some merchandise from tpublic.com/user/annoyedgruntboys.
That's right. Thank you so much for listening. Tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell a media mogul.
For this week, I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Craig.
And I've been Annoyed Grunt Boy Steve.
And remember, bets don't talk, they see and raise.
Fun? Is that how it's pronounced? I've only ever seen it written.
Other than the birth of my kid, this is my happiest moment.